Economic issues are overshadowed by Iran's nuclear program.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. The big news at the G20 summit this morning is not about the global economy. A few minutes ago, President Obama accused Iran of building a secret nuclear fuel plant for several years, and he demanded that Tehran comply with international rules on nuclear nonproliferation.
Iran has a right to peaceful nuclear power that meets the energy needs of its people. But the size and configuration of this facility is inconsistent with a peaceful program.
Reporter Tamara Keith joins us now live from Washington. Good morning.
Good morning.
So nuclear programs aside, Tamara, when the summit ends today, there will be the traditional closing statement that presumably will have something to do with the economy. I understand there's a draft of it floating around.
Yes, there is. And it is all about the economy. There are several big items in this draft. First, it makes it clear that global economic policy is actually going to be set at the G20 rather than the G7 or the G8. That means going forward, countries like China, India and Brazil will be included in the economic conversation. The communique also includes pledges to keep economic stimulus measures in place until a recovery takes hold. And also, leaders are agreeing, in principle at least, to make financial regulatory reforms.
And how are those reforms shaping up?
Well, they're saying that they will be in place by the end of 2012, so 3 years from now, and that it will be rules for banks and other financial institutions. They've agreed on broad principles but haven't written anything yet. They want banks to keep more capital on hand, and they want to create incentives to prevent the excessive risk-taking that led us to where we are now. And also, they're talking about restructuring executive pay at financial institutions.
Reporter Tamara Keith joining us live. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We just heard a few minutes ago, durable goods orders fell unexpectedly in August, second decline in 3 months. European markets are mixed this morning. Asian markets lost 1 to 2% earlier today. And on Wall Street yesterday, the Dow lost 41 points and it closed at 9,707. It is that time of year again. Millions of Americans are faced with rolling the dice on whether to lock in the price of heating their homes come winter. And with oil prices fluctuating again, the decision does not get any easier. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
Suddenly, there are millions of armchair oil speculators wondering if they should commit on their home heating oil at today's price with a pre-buy contract.
It's never a guarantee of what you're going to save. It's a guarantee of what you're going to pay.
Matt Cota heads the Vermont Fuel Dealers Association. He concedes pre-buys ended up burning a lot of consumers who guessed wrong at the end of last summer.
The price of heating oil was $4.25 a gallon, whereas it dipped down to $2 or even less when the bubble burst.
This year, oil analyst Stephen Shork reckons prices should head even lower, but nowhere nearly as much as last year.
You can try and trade this market and get another 20 cents out, and I'm not poo-pooing that, but given the volatility, you know what, this market moves 20 cents in any given day.
Matt Cota tells Vermont Public Radio the odds have favored the early buyer for 13 of the last 15 years.
If you bought in the summer, the price was less than if you bought in the winter. We've had 2 years where the opposite has happened, which is not a bad record.
But this year, with oil cheap and expected to stay that way, analyst Stephen Shork suggests it's a safe bet either way.
Compared to last year, you're ahead of the game.
I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing and online surveys. ConstantContact.com.
Ford Motors said yesterday it will build an assembly plant in China to make the next generation Focus compact car. Tapping the Asian market is one way the company hopes to grow sales. Another way, clever marketing. Reporter Elisa Roth tells us for its Fiesta subcompact, Ford is harnessing the power of the people.
Would this convince you to buy a Fiesta?
I love it. I love that it's just so small. I love the color. Especially I like that I chose it's pink. It's connected to my Bluetooth so I can just talk on the phone.
Ford doesn't pay Jill Hanner to say stuff like that. Or not exactly. She gets to drive the car for 6 months for free. Gas included. All she and 99 other Fiesta agents have to do is blog, tweet, and post about their vehicles as much as possible. Jolt Katona studies online marketing and social networks at UC Berkeley's Business School. He says there are three big benefits to Ford's campaign.
The first advantage is the targeting and directly reaching those consumers. The second thing is it generates considerable traditional media attention, like we are talking about now. And this is also kind of a market research tool.
Because like the rest of the world, Ford can read and watch everything the agents post. And as Hannah told me when we were driving in her car, Ford can watch her drive, too.
There's a tracking system on the car, so they always know where we are. And when we enter in our...
So they're following you around.
They are. I try not to think that they're sitting at their desks every, 2 seconds and, like, little, where's Jill's car?
In spite of that, or maybe because of it, just about everything the agents say about the cars, online and in person, seems to be relentlessly positive. Katona says that doesn't matter.
The logic goes, the person can say anything, so it's more credible. You can also say that it's more risky, but I think it's more about credibility.
Or credible because it's risky. Somebody could say they hate the car, but an agent could also get drunk and drive into a tree. Katona says the real risk is that Ford's not telling the truth, that the agents aren't really free. If that were true and the public found out, that would really undermine the credibility. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
And finally, the Hawaiian island of Kauai is hoping for a tourism boost from the 50th anniversary of the movie South Pacific. This weekend, a new resort opens on the very spot where Emile Debeck serenaded Nellie Forbush on Some Enchanted Evening. And next weekend, the original Nellie returns to the Garden Isle. 77-year-old Mitzi Gaynor will perform at the Kauai Marriott, still shampooing after 50 years.
I'm gonna wash that man right out of my hair and send him on his way.
In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great Friday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.